We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, welcome to Blue Wire. After you finish listening to this awesome Blue Wire podcast, make sure you check out the other pods in our Blue Wire family. Okay, I know, you're probably wondering, how do I do that? Well, it's simple. Go to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts and search Blue Wire. Ta-da! They will all be there, so have fun listening.
Hello and welcome to the Eurostep episode 11. We are here tonight fresh off of another Bucks win, a bounce back win against the Brooklyn Nets. I'm Kane Pittman and I'm joined as always by Ty Windisch and back on the winners list.
Yeah, it was. It looked like it was going to be pretty tight for a moment there. I think I almost tweeted the Bucks. I almost did a tweet jinx in the first quarter, it felt like. I was a little worried. But they came back and pulled it off with what I think is a pretty impressive fourth quarter.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I was just thinking about, and the game finished, 20 minutes ago. It was a long game. It was a long, long game tonight. It was over 2.5 hours. We'll get into that a little bit later. But, in the end, when you think about the circumstances, and I know there was a lot of guys that didn't play yesterday in Atlanta, but still on a back-to-back against a Brooklyn team that play really, really hard and have proven that they can come back from big deficits and play well in the fourth quarter. I think that the Bucks showed a lot of resiliency to get through that. And I think I tweeted at some point in the third quarter that I think it was going to be a really nice challenge for the Bucks to work through some frustration and some of the other things that were happening. But in the end, the Bucks win 131-121. It was a wild fourth quarter. The Bucks put up 40 points in the fourth. To get home in this one. This comes on the back of the loss, an equally wild loss yesterday in Atlanta, where they go down in overtime 136-135 with a unique cast of players playing yesterday in Atlanta with the Bucks deciding to rest some guys. But this win tonight is big for a number of reasons, and there's only four games left now for the Bucks in the regular season, but their magic number is now down to one. Only one Bucks win or one Raptors loss will clinch the home court through the entirety of the playoffs. There's some suggestion, we've seen some stuff on Twitter just now, that it looks like the Bucks either way would have game one of the NBA Finals. It doesn't look like the Warriors are going to be able to catch the Bucks, but the Raptors are still the only team that can sort of overtake the Bucks. So magic number is one for the Bucks and the Raptors. That's something to watch down the stretch. My feeling is when you look at this Bucks team, a team that has only lost back-to-back games once during the season, that they're not going to lose four in a row to finish the regular season. But hey, either way, the magic number is one. The Bucks are one win away, or as I said, one Raptors loss from Fiserv hosting game one for as long as the Bucks are in it.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, the Raptors get to contend with this not easy to beat Nets team. That's their next opponent on Wednesday here. But it almost feels like some random incredible shot making in parts of the game by Atlanta on Sunday, especially by Trae Young late. I don't want to say fluky, because I mean he was cold early and law of averages and everything else, but a couple dramatic, incredible shots away from the Bucks already having home court throughout the playoffs locked up. My question to you, does it really change anything that hasn't happened yet? If you're Mike Budenholzer approaching these last four games, does not officially having it yet with the magic number being one, is there a difference at all for you? I feel like probably not.
No, I don't think so. And the Bucks have always contended, and Mike Budenholzer, every time we've asked him, has contended that he's taken it every game, you know, on its merit, and it is important for them to get home court, but it hasn't changed their plans, or you shouldn't expect now that the magic number is one that they might, you know, start resting players. I don't think that's something we're going to see. I thought yesterday made a lot of sense the way that the Bucks managed that game, and I know there were a lot of Bucks fans that just and first of all, I do not blame you. Sometimes you just feel that the Bucks fans have this ingrained anxiety and paranoia about certain situations and things are going to happen, and I totally get it. Trust me, but that game yesterday and the way the Bucks managed that, I thought they did the right thing. And I know you look at it and you say, wow, they only lost by 1 point. Maybe if they played Bledsoe, then they could have won. And that's absolutely correct. But if the Bucks had decided, which potentially they had, that Bledsoe was maybe a guy that was going to try and get a night off in this back-to-back, we know he hasn't had a lot of nights off this season, then once Middleton was clearly carrying some soreness, still doesn't play tonight with the groin injury, Budenholzer did say that it's on the minor end of the scale. So not something to really worry about, but we know at this point, as much as the Bucks do want to lock up that one seed, they're not going to take any unnecessary risks. So once Middleton was not good to go yesterday in Atlanta, then Bud decided that that was the game that Bledsoe was going to rest. And I think that made a lot of sense with Giannis out as well. Get some other guys, give them a chance and see what they can do. And in the end, they nearly pinched it. Which was an incredible performance. But, now tonight you get Bledsoe back, you get Giannis back. And I think the fact that Giannis played tonight should give people a strong enough indication that they're not looking to, just give guys days off. And they're not unnecessarily resting players. They want to keep momentum. They want to limit minutes through the game if they can. But they're not just going to sit a bunch of guys for multiple games in a row. The guys are good to go. They're going to play. The guys want to play. And that's the reason why they're going to end up locking up this one seed. But, in the end, like you sort of touched on, an impressive win to sort of fight back through some questionable officiating, I think it's fair to say. I'll let you talk about that. I don't know how you viewed that tonight. I've certainly got some opinions on the officiating tonight. But it was a frustrated Bucks team for a large portion of the game.
No, so I think we're alike in this. I don't really ever like to quote unquote blame officiating. I feel like that's an overdone thing, and fans of one team or the other are always going to see some sort of bias in how the calls come out. But this one, you know, I tweeted it, and you know, Bucks fans were on my case for not being sort of aggressive enough in condemning the officiating. I guess I thought the Nets got a whole lot of calls. I mean, just if you watch the Bucks play a lot, you know how often they're attacking inside, whether it's Bledsoe, obviously, especially Giannis, but a lot of the slashers or inside presence guys on this team, the Nets shoot a lot of jumpers. I mean, they didn't have a lot of mid-range points tonight, but they shot 44 three-point attempts. They're not as much of a team that does work inside. All that said, you know, Brooklyn shoots 34 free throws to Milwaukee's 30. Giannis gets 11 attempts. It certainly seemed like he probably could have had a couple more of those. And he's not the only one. And there's more to it than just, you know, the pure amount of free throws. But it's always somewhat of an indicator. I certainly thought that it felt like the Nets got a lot of 50-50 or questionable calls. And it certainly didn't hurt their comeback or their late surges that required, like you said earlier, a really nice fourth quarter from the Bucks.
Yeah, and again, just a note on the free throws there. For the Bucks, remember that they down the stretch were getting fouled a lot in the last minute, so they certainly beefed up those numbers in that regard.
That's a good point.
I don't, and this is the thing, like I don't mind physical basketball and the refs letting stuff go. I'm totally okay with that, and I think that that's what you see a lot in the playoffs. So I think in that regard, it was probably good for the Bucks to work through that against a Brooklyn team that obviously with Jared Allen protecting the paint. Can do some stuff down there. And I thought Giannis in particular was really well defended by Allen and some of the other Nets defenders. I thought they did a great job. But I think the real frustration for the Bucks players came from the fact that there was some really touchy stuff being called down the other end. And then the Bucks just couldn't buy a foul with working through some serious, serious contact. I know George Hill on multiple occasions was really frustrated with the refs. Bledsoe and Brook Lopez end up picking up technical fouls, and we've seen Brook Lopez pick up his fair share of techs this year. Not up there with the sort of Draymond Greens of the league, but I think he'd probably have five or six techs in the league on the season if I had to guess. So some real frustration. Mark Budenholzer was frustrated. There was certainly a couple of fouls called on the Bucks for working over screens where it looked like the Nets players were clearly moving. They didn't call those moving screens. It just felt like everything was going. It just felt like the Nets were able to do a lot more defensively and be a lot more physical than the Bucks were. And that's where the frustration sort of grew from. So there was a point there in the third quarter where the Nets, and the game was really going back and forth. I think the Nets, you know, took the lead a couple of times. The Bucks took the lead back a couple of times. And as I already mentioned, the frustration was through the roof for the Milwaukee players. So that was where I really thought the game was in the balance. Potentially at that point, does someone get pushed over the edge and get ejected? Does Bud get himself thrown out of the game? I just wasn't sure where this game was going at the end of the third quarter when the Bucks take a 91-89 lead. At that point, Giannis is 4-for-14 from the field and really just not able to get into his usual rhythm. He comes out, he gets straight to the rack early, gets to the free throw line after that, hits a three-pointer, and just really the Bucks open up a double-digit lead early in the fourth quarter. And it felt like that little stretch from Giannis taking over the game with some help from Tim Frazier, we should point out, who hit a big corner three and had a nice assist in transition, got rid of the ball really early to Giannis, who then got to the free throw line. Those two combined with some nice early minutes and the Bucks really were able to get control of the game back.
Yeah, this felt like a game where you could really tell that the Bucks missed having some more of their shooters out there, even just more options of shooters, you know, whether it's Middleton, Snell, obviously Brogdon, the Bucks' best three-point shooter, and Mirotić, because the Nets very much were packing the paint, making life really hard for Giannis with either Ed Davis or Jared Allen back there, and then a lot of other guys coming to help out. I mean, they have a lot of either long forwards like Karuks, just bigger guys like Damari Carroll, Jared Dudley, who were making life difficult for Giannis, and just not a great three-point shooting performance for the Bucks. You know, 32.4%. The only guy who shot better than 40% was Tim Frazier, as you mentioned already. He was 2-for-3. Nice game, probably the best Bucks game so far from Tim Frazier. Nice little 7-7-3 and a steal performance for him. But it just really seemed like, you know, Giannis sends this one with two assists. Not a lot of great options for him. Brook Lopez, one of his bad shooting days, 1-for-5. Sterling Brown, 1-for-4, although everything else he did was impressive. It's just another, like, it's, I don't want to focus on it too much because every team's going to deal with injuries and it's part of the game and it's not really worth talking about a lot, but it's hard not to feel like the undertone of the Bucks are super banged up in pretty much every game at this point, because they can still win and come close to winning like they did yesterday with almost no one. But you can sense it all the time.
Yeah. So I just back to something you said earlier when you first started talking, there was the Nets packing the paint, and it was interesting because they played a hell of a lot of zone tonight, a lot of zone. And first of all, this is not something that the Bucks have you know, haven't seen this year. We know Miami's thrown the zone at them a lot. We know some other teams have done that. And the Bucks have had great success against the zone. So this wasn't a game where I was watching it and thinking, well, you know, the Bucks struggle against the zone. This could be an issue in the playoffs, so this could be something teams throw at them, because they've had no trouble in picking apart the zone in the past. But what I thought we saw tonight was that, as I already mentioned, the Bucks started to get a little bit frustrated, and I thought they started to get a little bit lazy on offense. They weren't quite working to get into those second and third actions. They were taking it upon themselves to try and drive at the defense, not moving the ball, and just getting a little bit sloppy on offense. And you know, I mean, they end up with 131 points. It's not like they were really slowed down, but I just thought perhaps the way the game was going and just some of the things that were happening in the game probably threw them off more than just the general zone themselves. I wouldn't say it was a really great night shooting from the outside for the Bucks. They're 11 for 34, so 32%. So not their best night shooting. But again, I don't want to, it would bother me, I guess, if people really thought that, well, the zone's going to be something that Giannis is going to have trouble with. The zone's going to be something the Bucks are going to have trouble with. I don't quite subscribe to that. I thought a lot of their problems were self-inflicted tonight in through the second and third quarter, where they were getting caught up in a few different things other than what was happening on the court. So, and credit to Brooklyn for that. But you touched on a couple of guys that really added to this performance tonight, and two guys we've spoke about a lot on the podcast recently, but George Hill, first of all, 18 points yesterday, 22 points tonight. His offensive game, you know, when you think back to when he first came to the Bucks, he was missing a lot of close, looks. He was getting to his spots, but he just didn't have that finishing touch. He looked like he was a little bit of out of sorts offensively. He's really figuring it out.
No, absolutely. I feel like we were kind of on George Hill Island pretty early, but it was more in terms of like, well, he's not going to do a lot offensively, but his leadership and especially his defense is huge. I know we talked about how much he impacts Milwaukee's defense per the on-off numbers, but what he's done offensively has been encouraging, especially because it's not like he just, you know, he hits like four threes in a row that happen to go in and that's where he gets his points. I mean, he was 0-for-2 from deep tonight. That's not as encouraging, but get to the line 7 times, make 8 of 11 free field goals. You know, that means, 6 of 9 from – or no, 8 of 9 from inside the arc, which helps. Like you already said, 22 points plus 3 assists and 2 boards and a steal. Those are just the kind of contributions that matter. I mean, that can definitely swing a playoff game that would be close if you have – someone who's not one of your best, you know, 3-4 players, comes off the bench but can make that kind of impact. And that kind of performance seems especially valuable to Milwaukee in this world where we know Malcolm Brogdon won't be back until probably the second round. Who knows how long it takes him to get acclimated again. Having another point guard option after Eric Bledsoe is just crucial. And George Hill's play has been comforting lately. I raised the question. I teased it earlier. I'm going to give it to you now, Kane. Is George Hill another 16-game player here on the Milwaukee Bucks getting ready for the postseason?
Well, I know that for a fact. I know that Bud believes he's a 16-game player because, if I was at the game tonight, sometimes you like – you can ask Bud a question and you know that as soon as you start talking, he's going to get a big smile on his face. And I'm pretty sure tonight would have been the night and Matt Velasquez was riding solo tonight at this one in Brooklyn. But I'm sure he's going to ask about George Hill, and I'm sure he got a big smile from Bud when he asked the question, because Hill's a guy that Bud knows. He's worked with him before in the past. He's got a lot of trust in this guy, and he's always preached his defensive capabilities, and we've seen that all year. But we also have seen that Bud is willing to throw George Hill out there in big moments in the fourth quarter. And you touch on a guy that the Bucks have been able to really lean on in Malcolm Brogdon to hit big shots, to come up clutch. don't be surprised to see George Hill take a lot of those minutes, potentially in the first round if we get in those situations, because Bud really, really, really trusts this guy to make smart decisions, make the right decisions, and get good shots. And we saw that tonight. There was stretches, and this is, we've seen this a couple of times now. I always think back to the game in Indianapolis. I think it was just before the All-Star break, or maybe I think it was just before the All-Star break, but the Bucks were really in a tough spot against the Pacers. They were struggling in the third quarter. They couldn't get anything going at all. And George Hill was the guy who, I think he had a personal 7-0 run in the third quarter there in Indiana. And we asked Bud about that after, and he said, yeah. He said, well, that's George Hill. He goes, he's been doing that his whole career. I trust him to do that. We know we can put the ball in his hands, and he's going to get good things are going to happen. So he's been there before. We know he was there in the finals last year. I think any of these guys that the Bucks have that have real playoff experience and have had big moments during the playoffs, as Hill has through his career all the way back through some of the other teams he's been with as well, he's someone that is going to be really, really critical for this Bucks team. And again, we always point to his defense, but over the last six games now since he came back from this injury, which was a kind of a scary injury for a guy of George Hill. Is George Hill's age and the way that he plays, you had some concerns of whether he was going to get that explosiveness back. Would he be able to get to the rack as easily as he has in the past? 11.8 points per game over the last six since returning. So just really, really, really good signs for the Bucks.
Absolutely good signs. It's just good to see. It's serendipitous because we've talked already about, we know Milwaukee is going to rely on veterans in the postseason. And we know George Hill, you know, even if he was struggling right now, it'd probably, especially with the injuries, it'd probably take some mighty struggling for him to not at least see some early minutes from Coach Bud in the postseason, because we've talked about before, you know, he likes relying on some of these veterans. You know, younger guys have roles on this team, like obviously Brogdon was starting, etc. But George Hill is a guy who was going to see run regardless, and for him to play well as in our last, you know, five games or four games now here, it's just comforting, I think, for Bucks fans. I think even though it hasn't been steady wins here at the end with all these injuries, I feel like the key personnel has looked good enough to make you feel good regardless. And, you know, the one seed's all but locked up, so that probably helps too.
Yeah, I started laughing when you started talking, because I know that you were always setting up the ad read, and I thought
that was a pump fake.
Yeah, well, I bought it because I thought you were just about to break into the ad read, and I just, every time you do that, I start laughing because I felt like I could read when you normally do that, but now I'm confused. I don't know. I don't even know what to think anymore. But again, another one of my favorites on the team, Sterling Brown, comes off the career high 27 against Atlanta yesterday. He backs that up. He has another 10 points in the first quarter after having 14 in the first quarter yesterday against the Hawks. He's showing, I mean, we know that he's got the ability to shoot the three tonight, as you pointed out earlier, 1-for-4. But yesterday, just real confidence shooting the ball against the Hawks. Tonight, gets to the rack again a couple of times. And there was one play in the fourth quarter where Jared Allen Jared Allen had he was a couple of steps back from Sterling. And when Sterling started to make his move, towards the bucket, I was sort of like, oof, I don't know how this is going to end up. But he's able to just, like, put his body in, as we know he does. Yeah, I mean, he's so physical. And it's really hard to push this guy off balance. He sort of puts a little bit of body into Jared Allen, one of the better shot blockers in the league, and then just finishes a nice little layup at the rim at a really, really crucial time in the fourth quarter. So Sterling Brown is really starting to show us a lot. I know he was a guy that that I was like, well, this guy's going to start. I just believed that he was going to be the guy that was going to slip into the Brogdon role if he could get healthy. But 16 points a game now he's averaging as a starter over the last four. He's proving to be a very, very important player and doing it efficiently. 6-for-11 tonight from the field. I know he was really efficient yesterday, scoring the ball. 5 boards, 3 assists tonight as well. Grabs a steal. He's becoming a really valuable fifth contributor in the starting lineup.
He doubtlessly is. I mean, just to sort of, instead of adding more analysis to that, which I feel like was already pretty comprehensive, how about a question? What can't Sterling Brown do? Because I feel like on both ends of the floor, it seemed like he's done pretty much anything he's needed to do over the course of, you know, these four games and the season when he's gotten real minutes. I mean, I haven't seen anything. And obviously, you know, there's always places he can improve, but there's not any one glaring thing when I watch Sterling Brown play where I'm like, oh, he really can't do this. Like, he can do everything at least adequately.
Yeah, so I think that, and I am still really hesitant to sit here, and I know there was a few people that sort of tweeted at me tonight, and they were sort of suggesting, well, he's as good as Brogdon, or what can't he do that Brogdon can do? And I'm a little bit hesitant to go that far at this point. I mean,
that's a little excessive.
I think so. And the reason, because, I mean, we've seen Brogdon do what he does for 3 years now. I mean, we've seen Sterling obviously being a valuable contributor, but we haven't seen him do what Brogdon has done consistently over, you know, 150 games or whatever it is that Brogdon's played in the league. So the differences between Sterling and Malcolm. First of all, there's a couple of moments in yesterday's game against the Hawks, or Sunday's game against the Hawks, where Sterling, I mean, he was really playing as the lead ball handler late in that game. And I thought that was great. I thought that was great for his development. It was good for him to take that lead role and really take responsibility. But there was a couple of times where he tried to force his way into the paint. He tried to get an easy look at the glass. And obviously, he had some big buckets. He had the what would have been the game winner if Trae Young doesn't get that one. So this isn't really a knock on Sterling, but there was a couple of times there where he just wasn't able to really work his way into the spots he wanted to. I think the craftiness that Brogdon has in terms of getting into the paint throws in some little hesitations. His ability to shoot the layup off the off foot with the offhand, with the reverse. I just think Brogdon's got some probably a little bit more craft around the basket that allows him to do some different things. And obviously the big difference between those two is how many big shots Brogdon's hit over his career with the threes. And yeah, I mean, there's a handful that he's had already in his short career. So that's definitely the big differences. But as you said, I mean, defensively, Sterling does a lot of what Brogdon can do. He's got a bit more size. He's a bit more physical than Brogdon. I think that he's got a greater ability to sort of fight over screens. I think Sterling brings a lot in that regard. And if he continues to develop offensively, then he does a lot of things that sort of do fit the sort of role that Brogdon was playing. And I think I probably take a lot more from tonight than I did yesterday against the Hawks. This was a legit playoff team. We see how he fit in with the things he was trying to do. And he plays 35 minutes tonight and didn't look out of place at all. So certainly in terms of looking forward to the first round, it's not ideal and you want Brogdon back, but this is a nice little player to slot in there.
Absolutely. I've been high on Sterling since his first G League game at the start of last season. And, you know, in addition to everything you said, again, he brings an edge, you know, a focused edge like a razor. All right, guys, we've got an announcement to make. Speaking of razors, Blue Wire is teaming up with Harry's to make sure our listeners are shaving comfortably. Go to harrys.com/bluewire to save $10, 10 American dollars, on a value trial set, which includes a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. You get all of that, those three things, for just $3 shipped right to your door. Enough with the cheap razors. We're done with those now. It's 2019. That's over. It's totally worth trying Harry's. Harry's has fixed shaving. It was busted. Now it's fixed by combining a simple, clean design with quality and durable blades at a fair price. Harry's founders, probably one of which named Harry, but I'm not sure, were tired of paying for razors that were overpriced and overdesigned. Harry's bought a world-class blade factory in Germany. That's pretty badass. That's been making quality blades for over 95 years. That's almost 100. Join the 10 million who have tried Harry's. Claim your free, not free, excuse me. Claim your trial offer. It's $3, not free. It's close to free. By going to harrys.com/bluewire. All of Harry's blades come with a 100% quality guarantee. If you don't love your shave, let them know and they'll give you a full refund. That must have been what I was thinking of when I said free, but you'll love it. You won't need the refund. Again, make sure you go to harrys.com/bluewire to redeem your razor for $3. And it's not just a razor, it's a whole kit. How can you pass that up, Kane?
I didn't know if you can. I mean, I'm a man that's got a beard, and you know, I think that you, if you're in my position, then you would be well advised to look after your facial hair.
You have to. You know, you can, next time you're at a Bucks game, if you see, I know they're injured right now, but if you see Nico, you see Pau Gasol, guys with righteous beards, you can start up a conversation. Say, hey, I know you guys listen to the Eurostep. Take advantage of this offer.
Well, I again, just a really comprehensive, stellar ad read from you. I thought the segue was brilliant. I know I bought the pump fake earlier. I thought you really bounced back well, and that was an impressive effort by you.
I did feel like it was good. I wish you didn't know it was coming so easily. I heard the chuckle real early in that one, but what can you do? I mean, when you got a signature move, you just got to go to it. Like Kareem asking why more players don't do the sky hook, which is patently hilarious.
No, I think the people are into it. But for Milwaukee, I'm interested because a lot of the talk, and a lot of the talk has been on the Bucks securing the number one seed through the playoffs, which we already discussed, one win away or one Raptors loss. But another milestone with four games to go, the Bucks are 58-20, two wins away from win number 60, which for the Bucks, when you look at that, that would be the first time they've won 60 games since 1980-1981. So, you know, I guess what are you – how much importance should they place on win number 60? I know, you know, there's varying sort of opinions out there on what the Bucks should do with Giannis, what the Bucks should do with some other key players. So if you are Mark Budenholzer, what are you thinking right now, and what's your game plan with these final four games?
You know, it's tough. I think first and foremost, the playoffs are the priority. And since you're there already, and, you know, we sound like a broken record, but it's, you know, it's kind of like flexing to say it. So I think we should keep saying it. You know, they're one, magic number is one for home court throughout the entire playoffs. And that's something that should be talked about because it matters. And the Bucks earn that by allegedly trying too hard this regular season. That's something I've heard. That it should, preparing for a playoff run comes first. It should come first. I think we've seen it does come first. I mean, Mike Budenholzer giving like four guys a day off when their Bucks are already short on players speaks pretty loudly to that for, you know, the first game of a back-to-back and Sunday's game against Atlanta. That all said, all my hedging aside, winning 60 would be awesome and I think important. You know, it's a number not many teams have hit. Last podcast, I made a list of teams that have done that in sort of this decade. And, you know, you got obviously Rockets, Warriors, Spurs, the Heat, the Thunder, the Bulls. It's not a long list. The Hawks have done it with Budenholzer, the Cavaliers, the Lakers way back when. Feels like ages ago now. I might have forgotten to read one of these, but it's not a lot of teams. It's not easy to do. Like you said, the Bucks haven't done it in, you know, nearly 40 years now. It would be special, I think, to hit it, but I think it'd be more special to go on a real playoff run. So that's why you need to have your priorities in order.
Yeah, no doubt. I thought it was actually really interesting watching the Hawks game on Sunday. And I mean, obviously, I'm at a lot of the games that I don't really get to listen to Marcus and Jim too often. But it was interesting hearing Marcus Johnson talk about winning 60 games and whether that was something that he really placed a lot of value on. And he was on that team, the last Bucks team to win it in 1980-1981. They finished 60-22. And he said that it was a really big milestone for that team. And it was something that they really wanted to get to. They wanted to achieve 60 wins. Now, unfortunately for them, as he pointed out, they still finished third in the Eastern Conference because you had Philly and Boston also won over 60 games, so which is, I mean, that's a ridiculous situation. I mean, to win 60 and finish third in the conference. But it was interesting to hear the players' perspective. I think the Bucks players would really want to get to 60. Obviously, they need to finish two and two to get there. So, I mean, it's not asking a lot. But again, I think as you sort of pointed out, I think it's very clear that the Bucks, if everyone's fine, they're probably going to play. But they're not taking any chances. Middleton's missed the last two. We know Giannis has missed a whole bunch of games with the ankle in recent times. So I think, you know, Bucks fans can be confident that they're not taking any unnecessary risks. They are going and trying to win games, but they're also understanding that the playoffs are only a week and a half away, 2 weeks away from game one at Fiserv Forum. So it's business time now, and there's no need to really mess around and take unnecessary risks. So really, really good to see Giannis get through the game tonight and not tweak that ankle again. That's going to be something to watch. Also, you know, Middleton, hopefully he will come back and play Thursday against Philadelphia, but if he's not right to go, don't expect him to play. And it's interesting to see what the other teams are doing in the conference as well. We know Embiid's missed a couple of games in a row now. I think Jimmy Butler didn't play tonight. I think I saw that. So, look, you know, all these teams are sort of, you know, trying to rest their guys if they can, and there's not a lot of teams that are in that position. So the Bucks would be wise to take advantage of that. The other point is that the playoffs are stretched out over such a long period of time that, you know, if all things go well for the Bucks and they roll through the first round like we suspect that they probably will, then they're going to get a lot of rest during the playoffs as well before potentially a second round matchup against Boston or Indiana, which, again, just projecting ahead, yeah, I feel like it's going to be a long series. So, look, they've got some decisions to make, but I think the big thing is that they're not going to risk, you know, take any unnecessary risks. I think the other positives is a lot of guys have got a lot of minutes that potentially probably needed a bit of a run before the playoffs. And Tim Frazier is one of those guys that's had a couple of really, really good games in a row. So some real positives for the Bucks: the fact that they have been able to rest some players and still remain in good shape, still win games, and not really have any, not really put that number one seed in jeopardy at all is a credit to everyone involved. But Philadelphia on Thursday, any thoughts on that one? I know it's always hard at this time of year because you don't know who's going to play, but it is going to be on TNT. Typically, those national TV games get the big players to play, but you know, what do you think we should expect from the game against Philadelphia?
I think the saving grace for this game may be being entertaining to someone who's not locked into one of these two teams, or just for a casual viewer, is that these two teams kind of, I don't know if it's bad blood, but maybe it's bad blood. I mean, we got Giannis and Ben Simmons trading blows last game. Joel Embiid will have a feud with anyone gleefully. And obviously, you know, Ersan now, a Bucks double agent who was with Philly last year. It just, and I guess Tobias Harris and J.J. Redick are very short-lived form of Bucks, but I think more importantly is the sort of Ben Simmons versus Giannis and Embiid versus everybody thing. It's hard to say who's going to play. I mean, by that point, maybe not by that point. I don't know when the Raptors play next, but it's the Sixers are all but locked into number three. I mean, they're 5.5 back from Toronto, so that's not changing. They're 3.5 up on Boston, and the way Boston's played lately, that doesn't seem like it's changing with, again, just, you know, 3, 4, 5, whatever games left for those two teams. So they probably won't have much incentive to play hard aside from the fact that it's national TV, and they could probably see the Bucks in the playoffs if both teams do well, et cetera, et cetera. But in terms of real right now consequences, both teams probably won't have a lot. So I would be pretty surprised to see the kind of intense game we saw last time these teams matched up, where Embiid and Giannis playing a lot of minutes, trading blows late. I mean, maybe if everyone gets caught up in a little bit, but I just don't know if the same intensity is going to be there at this point in the season.
Yeah, I think that's fair. That's a fair assessment of it. There's not a lot to be gained either way. I mean, yes, obviously, you know, if the Bucks still need that win to clinch the number one seed, that could be a factor. But in terms of these two teams, not a lot to gain. Potentially, they're going to see each other in the conference finals. You know, again, we saw these two teams play each other late in the season last year, and obviously a different situation for the Bucks. But, I mean, the Bucks completely threw that game, and it was, you know, I think they were down 40 in the second quarter or something stupid like that. So that's the type of thing you can see late in the season. Sometimes you see games like this where one side or the other will just completely throw in the towel and no one's going to play at all. So, I mean, we don't really know what to expect, but it's interesting. I've just seen an interesting stat, and I think we've pretty much got through everything that we want to for this episode, but I would like to, and obviously you can add anything you want to, but this might be a good way to end this. The Bucks win their 45th game by double digits tonight. They are just the eighth team in NBA history to win 45 games by double digits. The other seven teams, all seven of them ended up winning the NBA title.
Ooh, I like it.
So when you think about some of the narratives about the Bucks and, they're trying too hard and, they're dominating too many games. The Bucks have been able to keep their starters' minutes very low. Everyone should be feeling fresh. Obviously, they have some injuries and some guys that they want to get healthy, but for the most part, the Bucks go into the playoffs feeling very, very fresh. And that's a stat the Bucks fans might like to take some comfort from. 45 double-digit wins, eighth team in NBA history, the other seven all won the NBA title.
I don't think there's much of a better way to close than that. I mean, that sums it up, folks. I mean, this is a team that everybody who knows about basketball, who watches NBA basketball, should expect to be at the very least a legitimate contender come April, May, and, June.
Yeah, I mean, they've put themselves in the box seat. We know that, at this point, we're 78 games through. We're nearly there to the playoffs. We've been waiting for the playoffs to start for a long time, which is not something that Bucks fans are used to. Normally, Milwaukee would be scrapping for the eighth seed or like last year, jostling to try and, find some matchup that you think gives you an advantage. But they are one game away from locking up game one at Fiserv through the whole playoffs. It's been a dominant regular season. The Bucks will play Philadelphia on Thursday, and then they have a weekend back-to-back. They take on the Nets and the Hawks again. I don't know what that scheduling's all about, but they are doing that a back-to-back at Fiserv on the weekend. So we are really, really getting to the business end right now.
Absolutely, and I still have reservations about that last game of the season. I think it's going to be a weird one, and Thunder in a weird place right now, so that'll be interesting to watch. But yeah, no, I think we covered everything for now. I'm excited, man. I'm ready for the playoffs. We've had enough regular season basketball. The Bonzi era began and ended. It was almost a 1-0 perfect era. Shout out to Bonzi, though. I mean, 15-16, good line for him. I have to give Bonzi some respect for grinding in the G League all season. He got a shot, and I thought he played pretty well.
Oh, he was great. He was great. And, he got one minute tonight. His shot was pretty savagely rejected, but... I thought he was good yesterday. It was fun to see those guys play, but as you said, we're not here to watch Bonzi Carlson in the playoffs. We're here to watch Giannis and Middleton and the big guns really show out for the Bucks. So we'll be back on Monday to talk through what we think and what we believe will be your number one seed Milwaukee Bucks through the playoffs. Ty, thank you again.
Thank you, Kane. Thank you to everyone for listening. Of course, subscribe, rate, review if you enjoy it. Tell two friends, they'll tell two friends. And in no time, we'll be running the world here from the Eurostep podcast. Thanks, everybody. Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation.
and hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE system technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.